The reading of God's Word from the Gospel of Matthew, the 23rd chapter. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, "They sit in Moses' seat, so you must obey them and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves, they are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Everything they do is done for people to see. They make their phylacteries wide and the tassels on their garments long. They love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They love to be greeted in the marketplaces and to have people call them rabbi. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have only one master, and you are all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth father, for you have one father, and he is in heaven. Nor are you to be called teacher, for you have one teacher, Christ. The greatest among you will be your servant, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled, but whoever humbles himself will be exalted." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Raymond Voigt is a judge who sits on the bench of the District Court of Ionia County, Michigan. And like many judges, he rules his courtroom with an iron fist. He has rules and regulations, expectations that he levels upon everyone who enters his court. And at the top of the list is a strict no cell phone policy. Nothing bothers the judge more than in the middle of a court proceeding for someone's cell phone to ring. Immediately when that happens, the judge will invite the person who is the guilty party to stand, and he'll just suspend court operations so that he can put the person whose cell phone went off in contempt of court and fine that person $25 on the spot. He means business. But wouldn't you know it, some months ago, the good judge's own cell phone went off in the middle of a proceeding, as he explains the situation. Evidently, it was in his pocket and he bumped it. And, you know, Siri started going off, asking what number he wanted to call. And the more he was trying to reach through his robe to cut it off, the louder it got. Until finally, you know, the courtroom broke up because everyone knew about the judge's strict policy. He called a recess, went into chambers, came back. It wasn't long. It didn't take long. And after coming back from recess, the good judge pronounced himself in contempt of court and leveled upon himself a $25 fine. And as the judge explained afterward, judges are not above the law. They don't get to violate the rules. And when they step outside the boundaries of expectations, they too have to live with the consequences. The last time I saw that good judge still sits on the bench because he has been elected time and time and time again. And who would not vote for a judge who practices what he preaches? Sadly, as you know, more and more today, that is the exception than it is the rule. People who say one thing and then do the same thing, that doesn't happen as much as it should. It's more the case people say one thing and they do something totally opposite. Even people of faith. If you ever get bored during a sermon, this is dangerous, I know, but let me give you a suggestion. Just go through the bulletin and look for typos. Now, I don't know, we work hard here at Mountain Brook Baptist Church not to have typos, but occasionally, you know, when you're in a church and things aren't really speaking to you and you want to occupy the rest of the time, look for typos. You might find some delightful ones, like the typo that was in the bulletin of a New Jersey Presbyterian church that proudly confessed that it was an ethically diverse congregation. Welcome to such and such Presbyterian church. Here in this church, we are an ethically diverse. What they meant to say was ethnically diverse. We're multicultural, we're multi-ethnic, we're multiracial. But that's not how it was printed. We're ethically diverse. We're all over the map, as one wag might have put it. They confessed that they were a church full of hypocrites. I've been doing this 40 years. 40 years. Hard to believe. And over the course of those 40 years, there's a lot that has changed. A lot that has changed in ministry since I began serving the church. But the one thing that has remained the same, and I think will continue to be the same until Jesus comes, is that people on the outside will look at the church and say, we don't want to be involved with that bunch because they are a group of phonies, sham and pretense, a bunch of hypocrites. No one wants to be a part of any group that doesn't practice what it preaches. I don't. And that is why I think from time to time the church needs to look to the text that is before us this morning from Matthew's gospel, where Jesus has gathered his disciples and he's speaking to the crowds. And he's preparing them to give a consistent witness to the difference that it makes when one's life, to use Mary's wonderful words this morning, when one's life is calibrated, aligned, ordered in accordance with the reign and the rule of God. Jesus, at this point in his ministry, has spent 3 years pouring out his heart to people, inviting them to consider the difference that the kingdom of heaven can make when they give themselves to it. And now Jesus is preparing to pour out his very life by going to the cross, so that people might experience the fullness of God's redemptive purpose now and the hope of glory when this life is over. And he wants his disciples to understand how important it is for their words and their deeds to line up, to correspond, to match. And he picks on, of all people, the religious leaders of his day. The Pharisees, the teachers of the law, who, when you read Matthew's gospel, had been making life so difficult for Jesus. And what is Jesus concerned about with respect to the religious leaders? It is their inconsistency. That's putting it nicely. He calls them a bunch of hypocrites. And he says, now, they're in important places. They sit in Moses' seat. That is, they have the authority of God's law behind them. Jesus was not anti-law. He was not anti-law. He came not to abolish the law. You remember that from the Sermon on the Mount. He came to fulfill the law, to fulfill the law. They sit on the seat of Moses. They have the authority of the law. Do what they tell you to do, but don't do what they do because they do not practice what they preach. Jesus understood. For the good news of the gospel to receive any sort of hearing at any time, but especially in the day in which we are now living, people who claim to be the people of God, who speak how much they believe in God, the best witness that they can give is for their lives, for their deeds to line up with their confession. For when a person's deeds line up with his or her confession, that's when salvation actually happens. You know the name Henry Heimlich? He was a thoracic surgeon. He died in 2016 at the ripe old age of 97 years of age. Henry Heimlich developed the famous Heimlich maneuver, which has best estimates resulted in the saving of over 100,000 lives. It's just a simple, you may have seen it. You may have seen it in practice where someone is choking on food and another person comes behind them and presses forcefully so that the food is dislodged. Over 100,000 persons whose lives were saved because someone performed that maneuver, which Dr. Heimlich, I believe, came up with in around 1976. In March of 2016, just several months before he died, Henry Heimlich used the maneuver himself for the first time in a medical emergency. He developed the technique, but he only got to use it one time. 97 years of age, he was in a senior residence facility. And it just so happened that a woman by the name of Peggy Diss was seated at Dr. Heimlich's table while they were serving hamburgers that day at the residence center. And Peggy started choking. Dr. Heimlich's sprang into action and began to perform the technique by which he is known, and he saved Peggy's life. Now, what if that had happened and Dr. Heimlich had said to himself, well, you know, I came up with a technique, but I really don't practice it. I can tell other people how to use it, but I'd never stoop to doing such a thing because, you know, that can be gross depending on the circumstances, and I just don't want to get my hands. What would you have thought of Dr. Heimlich if he had not jumped into action? Peggy Diss could tell you that she, for one, is glad that he did. What is it that you know? Well, you may not know the Heimlich maneuver. It's not that hard to learn. Might save a life. But I trust that this morning in this place of worship, you know the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shouldn't perish, will not perish, but will have everlasting life beginning now and continuing into eternity. That's the good news that we have celebrated today. If you know it, do you know of someone who may be in need of receiving it? And can you show them the difference that believing in Jesus makes? in your everyday life? Can you practice what Jesus preached? Can you humble yourself so that Jesus may exalt you? And can you be open to Jesus using you in such a way that through your words and your deeds, you exalt others? And you help them to know what you know, who you know, the joy of God's salvation in Jesus Christ, and the difference that it makes in your everyday experience. Practice what Jesus preached.